Cavalcade of Kings. Richard the Third. On rides the cavalcade, and Richard the Third now approaches. Richard was the son of Richard, Duke of York, and was born at Fotheringay Castle on the 2nd of October, 1452. Rumor accused him of the murders of Henry the Sixth and his son, Prince Edward of Wales. But Richard was probably not quite so black as the Lancastrian historians painted him. He possessed great charm of manner, was generous, and promoted justice and religion. But circumstances conflicting with his ambitions helped the evil characteristics of his nature to kill his finer qualities. Upon the death of his brother, Edward the Fourth, we find Richard and his friend, the Duke of Buckingham, resting at an inn on their way to London from Scotland.
Well, Buckingham, 'tis glad I am to have my legs under a table instead of across a horse. Ho there, innkeeper. Dost think our throats are slit and that we cannot swallow meat or drink?
My most humble apologies, noble lords. The best my poor house has to offer is thine for the asking. What shall it be, sirs? A ham or a brace of pheasant or a pigeon pie that's fit for a king?
Methinks the pigeon pie. What say ye, Buckingham?
Then if 'tis fit for a king, 'tis fit for a knave like me.
Then, innkeeper, 'tis pigeon pie, and see ye that 'tis fit for a king for thy future king.
And a jug of wine, mine host, and let my comeliest wench bring it to our table. Away with thee.
Aye, sir.
Thou art a loose-tongued one, Richard, and thy boasting will bring trouble upon thine own head. Remember that which is whispered oft travels far. And thy nephew, King Edward, is but 10 miles away.
I know it, Buckingham, and I will not rest until the brat and his brother with him are safely in the tower.
It will soon be accomplished, but I would enjoin thee to be cautious until all is over. The queen, their mother, has been exceedingly uneasy about thee, Richard, and implored my lord Hastings to send instructions to Ludlow Castle, bidding their uncle, the Earl of Rivers, to raise an army to escort the young king to London.
And, of course, good Hastings argued against the proposal?
Yes, and told the queen she would have to be contented with an escort of 2,000 horse. At present, they are encamped at Stony Stratford, but 10 miles distant.
Know they that we also journey to London?
Yea, and being anxious for our friendship, it is only reasonable to suppose that the brat's uncles will leave their charge for a few hours and join us here for some conviviality.
I fear me it will be difficult for me to control the urge to run these cursed woolville upstarts through.
Patience, patience. Bear with them for a few hours, Richard. In faith, it will be easy enough to force a quarrel on them later.
Yeah, and then I shall charge them with treason and with alienating from me the affections of my sweet nephew. Curse his puny body.
Then I will do my part and ride up with my 300 horse, and ye shall order me to arrest the Woodville dogs. Later, we shall take young Edward, ride with him to London, and make a great procession through the streets.
Aye, and I shall ride at his side, bareheaded, and ogle him with adoring eyes.
Such a condition will be to the people's taste. Later, we shall conduct him to the bishop's palace, thence to the tower. Richard, all can be accomplished with a smooth countenance. Courage, nerve, wit is all ye need, and lo, the throne of England will be in the hollow of thine hand.
But what of the young king's brother?
Aye, Richard, what of him? It would be unkind to separate two such sweet children. Verily, the little Richard must also be placed in the tower to bear the little king company. Such a kind thought of their dear uncle. Who will immediately proceed to have himself named protector of the state, during the young king's minority.
I am thinking, good Buckingham, that I will be content to remain protector of the state for long.
Nay, good Richard, not long, for soon he will be king.
Buckingham, thou art a foul plotter. When I am king, I shall go in fear and trembling of thee.
And I of thee, Richard. When thy ambitions are realized, and thou hast no further use for me, thou wouldst not consider twice the lopping off of my head, and it suited thy purpose.
Perish the thought, good Buckingham. Still, 'tis as well we understand each other.
I have no illusions where ye are concerned, good Richard.
Richard's plot succeeded. The young princes were taken and shut up in the tower. A few weeks later, Richard spread the report that Edward IV had not been legally married to Elizabeth Woodville, and therefore the young prince was not the legitimate heir to the throne. Buckingham made an impassioned speech to the people, declared the rumor true, and urged the people to accept Richard as their king. This was done, and on the 4th of July, 1483, he was crowned in state by Cardinal Bourchier. Later, he toured the English provinces with his wife, Anne, the daughter of the Earl of Warwick. At the moment, we find them together at York.
Richard, no good will come of all this. What are the plaudits of the crowd compared with thy peace of mind?
Thou art ungrateful, Anne. Have I not raised thee from obscurity to the highest position in the land?
Richard, my birth is as noble as thine own. I am the daughter of Warwick, and I have never languished in obscurity. But even if 'twere so, in faith, I'd prefer obscurity to a life of deceit and false pretenses. Richard, thou wilt never know a moment's peace whilst the rightful king of England lives. Give up this mad idea, and let us live happily in the humbler, yet more secure position of the Duke and Duchess of Gloucester, before this lust for kingly power drives thee crazy.
Anne, England has suffered much since Henry V closed his eyes in his last long slumber. First a madman ruled her, then an immoral weakling who left a delicate child to succeed him, when what was needed was a skillful soldier, a brave man, reckless of consequence. I tell thee, Anne, England is facing the deadliest crisis of her history. If she comes out victorious, she will gain all she has lost, and her former glory will be restored to her. To lose the fight means degradation, dishonor, obscurity, ultimate annihilation. Think ye that I, who have fought aye and bled for her on her battlefields, can content myself in my own security when I know I can save her? No, no. And it matters naught to me whom I sweep aside, so long as England's path to greatness is cleared of all obstacles.
How well you love England, Richard.
Anne, England I love with all my soul. She is wife, mistress, mother, child to me, and for her I would sacrifice life, love, self-respect, yea, even honor itself.
Later, the ghastly murder of the two young princes in the tower caused a wave of horror to spread over England. And soon Richard found himself the center of all accusing eyes. A quarrel arose between the king and the Duke of Buckingham, which ended in the crafty duke losing his head. One by one, Richard's supporters fell away from him, and he found himself a veritable lone wolf, fighting his own fight in his own way for the England he loved so well. Soon a powerful enemy in the person of Henry Tudor, Earl of Richmond, who was descended through his mother from John of Gaunt, laid claim to the throne. He gathered together an army and landed in Wales. Later, Richard met Henry at Bosworth in Leicestershire. It is the eve of the battle, and Richard is sitting alone in his tent, musing, conscience-stricken.
Power. Power. What have you brought me? Nothing but hideous nightmares. First I see Henry, mouthing and gibbering. Then I hear his laugh, his insane, dreadful laugh. Night after night in my dreams he comes to me. And then Edward comes, crying piteously not to let the evil man kill him. Oh, gracious heaven, is my torture never to end? Never to end. It has all been for England. Every crime I have committed has been for her. Always have I considered the welfare of my people. I have tried to rule them justly, to further religion, and to live and do my duty by them. If I have done wrong, then God punish me. I commit myself to him.
Sir, Henry's army is marshalling but 2 miles distant. The hour of conflict is drawing nigh.
Aye, and which of my one-time friends have joined his forces, messenger?
Sir, I fear me. There are many, and amongst the traitors are my Lord Stanley and my Lord Earl of Northumberland.
Rats always leave a sinking ship. Well, let them leave. If my time has come and my end is nigh, then shall I meet it, sword in hand, as befits the King of England.